Hi, and welcome to the College Financial Lady podcast. I'm Anne Garcia, a fee-only financial advisor and author of the College Financial Lady blog. My guest today is Megan DeBoer. Megan is the founder of Tended Wealth, a business that helps individuals heal their emotional and practical relationship to money. As a certified financial recovery counselor, her approach considers the context of our current financial circumstance, you know, lived experience, family of origin, and the broad culture that shapes our beliefs about money. She's passionate about transforming this fundamental part of our lives from shame and overwhelming to a sense of agency, clarity, and potential. Does this all sound like it would be really helpful for thinking about paying for college? Megan also specializes in helping women who are self-employed to radically increase their She works both with courses and one-on-one clients, and all of whom regularly attest to the life-changing power of her work. And in fact, that's how I came across Megan. I think that for many families, a lot of the stress around college planning comes from the fact that so much of our initial thoughts and plans for college are driven by emotions, you know, our own experiences, our love of our children and our goals for them. But then the rubber hits the road, so to speak, and our choices are then constrained by our finances. So I'm really glad to have Megan here today to help us work through that and hopefully start moving from stress to clarity. Megan, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much, Anne. I'm delighted to be here in this important conversation.
Wonderful. Well, so let's start on the sort of on the practical side. I'm always telling people to, you know, find some amount they can contribute to college, but honestly, I don't provide a lot of specifics. I don't talk about, you know, how do you look at your budget with the goal of freeing up some money on an ongoing basis to target that towards college. Are there some strategies or tactics that you would recommend for that?
Yes. So I think, you know, it can feel really overwhelming, especially for anyone listening who has younger children, and there are lots and lots of other expenses at that time in your life. But I think that emotionally, a lot of the time there can be this, it's like there are so many needs, so many bills, so many expenses that are sort of all front of mind, and college feels distant and abstract and also really overwhelming and unattainable a lot of the time. So that's the emotional experience that we often have. And it's where we can quickly kind of shut it off or think like, well, I'll get to that when. And I think one of the most important shifts, at least from a, you know, mindset or emotional perspective, is to remember that we can do both, and we can have we don't have to go into deprivation in service of our children having a college savings account. So it's really like starting to explore, could we reduce the amount that we spend on entertainment by $50 and maybe eating out by $20, and kind of just slowly build that amount over time that you can be putting and diverting in that direction. And from my perspective, it's really about, of course, having a structure that you can look at your spending, develop a spending plan that is in alignment with your values and your priorities, and being able to see what choices you do have. That is a really important piece from my perspective, and that's what I help my clients with. But that can often feel like its own big project in and of itself. So it's just really approaching it with the attitude of, I'm not going to all of a sudden not have any money. I can sort of shift spending, and having a place to put the money, you know, having a 529 account or whatever kind of vehicle, even if it's just a savings account until the amount is large enough to put into a 529 account, really just starting to build the practice, the automatic transfers into a savings account, and then having a really systematic way to keep increasing that amount. So whether that's on a quarterly basis or on the child's birthday, looking to increase that amount. So even if you're only starting with $25 a month, looking to increase that as frequently as possible. Those are some of the ways that I approach this huge question with my clients, and just to remember that starting is really the most important piece always with saving.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned, you know, the child's birthday is a good time to look at that, because that's something I often tell families too. I mean, that's a great opportunity to not just reflect on the person that your child has become over the past year, but also to think about the person that you want them to be. And
yeah,
chances are you're spending some money on them right around then anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And another good thing about that time of year is, especially, you know, if you kind of build it in, depending on your family culture and, you know, where it fits into everyone else's priority and value system, but actually inviting family members to make a contribution to that account as well as a part of their birthday gift, in lieu of lots of tangible gifts, and just setting that up as a part of the as a part of your own family value can be a great way for other family members to contribute and participate in the child's future.
Yeah. And it seems like so many 529s make it really easy to do that. Mm-hmm. I know here in Oregon, the Oregon College Savings Plan has a really easy to use gifting page that send out the link and sit back and wait for the money.
Well, yes. Exactly.
If you're in some families.
Yes, exactly. And then the other thing that I always recommend is, you know, getting into a practice, and this is just an overarching practice that I think is really helpful, in general, but particularly for college savings, is to anytime an expense changes, like you're done paying for childcare, which is a huge expense in those early years, that you then divert a portion of that, you know, increasing or beginning a college fund at that time. So it doesn't feel like a new expense. It's just rather than the relief of like, oh, we don't have that bill anymore, but actually diverting a portion of that to college savings.
And you'd have to have different kids than I did to do that, because I know, like, when my kids finished potty training, my daughter wanted ballet as her reward. And I was like, I was looking forward to not paying for diapers, and now I'm paying for ballet instead.
Right. Oh, I know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's always something. There's always something that comes up. And so if you integrate that savings, and if you're kind of doing it over time and increasing it over time, you are kind of building that into the structure of what is available and what is possible. And I think having that really, you know, as a parent and for your children, having your own clarity about where college falls in your own priority, about what is important for you in your financial life. So that's, of course, that comes first and foremost in the conversation as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think you and I both see this a lot, and this will probably sound familiar to most people, that most families' financial lives aren't linear. So, you know, we as advisors talk about, well, if, as long as you every month save this many dollars, at the end of time, you'll have, you know, X balance in your account ready to go for college. But most families' lives aren't like that. They're not linear. You go through phases of, you know, babies and diapers and childcare, and then from that you transition to summer camp and club sports or, you know, whatever your family's or your child's activities are. You know, and then there's always something coming up. Your car breaks down, braces, you know, your niece is planning a destination wedding and wants the whole family to attend. Given all the demands on a family's money, how can people feel successful in just doing what they can?
Yeah. And I think that is really the heart of it, and where we can so easily go into a place of shame about what we're not doing, but to really look at the reality, and life is lifey. there's so many expenses.
I'm writing that down. Life is lifey.
And, you know, it's really hard to remember that, you know, 5 years go by and it's like, oh, we haven't saved as much for college as we had wanted or hoped to save or for whatever. And it's really important to continue to hold the reality and the truth of where, what choices you made when. And I think one of the most important, pieces in my work is really making sure that you are including those irregular, non-monthly, emergency types of expenses into your spending plan, into your savings, into one of the very intentional tiered savings goals that is really saving that is meant to be spent, so that it protects other goals and other assets that you have. And of course that, you know, in an ideal world, you would have plenty to go around. And sometimes there isn't plenty to necessarily go around. But for me, it's like holding the intention. So even if something big were to come up, that you still hold the intention of at least something going in the direction of college, something going in the direction toward different goals, so that you are feeling that success, even if it isn't quite where you want it to be, that you're maintaining the momentum of it.
Yeah. One of the things I like about 529s is they send an annual statement. So even if you're only contributing a little bit every month, if you, wait and look at it in longer intervals, you, sometimes you'll actually see some progress.
Exactly. And to remember that every little bit is going to help that student, you know, reduce the amount of debt that they have to incur or to make something more possible. And every dollar toward that goal is a huge gift, and to not lose sight of that, and to, you know, remember that you're doing the best you can, you know, to meet all of the different needs that are required in raising children, which is no small thing.
that's for sure. I mean, saving for college has a really strong emotional component to it. And I mean, you and I have both done this for our own kids. But, you know, we tend to look back really fondly on our own college years. I think most people do. And we want something similar for our own children. And at the same time, college costs have risen so dramatically from our generation to our children's generation. And so they have a really different set of choices. And those choices might be more constrained than ours were. Or they might not be, because I think, you know, when we applied to college, we didn't apply to 16 different schools, you know, the way people did now. But it seems like for a lot of parents, not being able to give their children the college experience that they had feels like a personal failure that will limit their own child's future. Yeah. I always feel like, and I argue, there are plenty of great college options at lots of different price points. And it's not necessary for your child to attend a $75,000 a year college for them to have, you know, both a great college experience and a great future. But I also know that this is really hard for a lot of parents because, you know, in particular, because when we went to college, cost wasn't anywhere near as big a part of the conversation as, you know, as it is now. And, you know, then our students often have friends who have really different financial resources and might have different sets of choices available to them. What kinds of suggestions do you have for navigating that emotional minefield of paying for college?
Yeah. And it can be an emotional minefield, especially if, you know, it's sort of the moment where you are confronting your own shame, not just about your own memory and the difference between what your experience was and what the experience that you want your children to have, but this can also dredge up shame around, you know, the fact that you maybe didn't make enough money that you had hoped to make in your career, that you haven't been able to save enough, or that you just literally don't have enough to make it the experience that you had. And so really giving yourself an opportunity to get support to work through that shame, I think, is one of the best gifts that you can give yourself, or at least talking about it openly, giving it voice rather than it just being, you know, something that you feel, shame is be, you know, we tend to hold and keep secret. Like that's what shame thrives in, is the secrecy. So if we can let that out in conversation with someone we trust, that's an important piece of the process. And not doing that, I've seen a lot of people kind of overcompensate for that shame and try to sort of either hide the reality or make everything feel possible when there will be financial consequences from that. And so being able to address that inner shame to the best of your ability and with support is a really important piece in just being able to sit down neutrally in that conversation with your student, with your child, and really explore this is the reality. And it is so different than when we were, you know, as parents when we were younger. And we, you know, we are like, I was incredibly privileged and fortunate to graduate without any student debt. And I just feel like, you know, that is just a tremendous gift that I was given. But it is not what I was able to give to, we're not able to give that completely to our children. They are both going to have a little bit of student loan debt. Not very much, but a little bit. And that, you know, because I know the signs of shame in myself, I was able to work with that. But without working through that, you know, it's like that we want to give everything to our children. And so it's just important to work with that internal wrestling that may come up for us.
I always remember, I look back to when my kids were early in high school, and my son had two good friends. And one of them was very, very wealthy, and one of them was very, very poor. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point thinking about, you know, I was sad that my son was going to have a different set of choices than his wealthy friend mm-hmm. when it came to college. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to realize that I was never thinking about how many more choices he was going to have than his poor friend. You know, I was only comparing up, and mm-hmm. I was only comparing where we were falling short and not being grateful for the things that I was able to do mm-hmm. when I had a great example of an absolutely wonderful, wonderful kid, you know, a great student, a great person, you know, who was going to have a far more limited set of choices than mm-hmm. than my son was through no fault of his own. I realized I was maybe framing that the wrong way.
Mm. Yeah. And it's so easy. You know, we are always like, that's our habit oftentimes in this culture is to be comparing up and looking at the disparity that we experience. And I think it's such an important place for us to enter and to look at the whole spectrum and to see and to be in conversation with our children about that disparity and that socioeconomic difference, and that we have our own situation that is very different from, you know, all of the different friends that they may have, our peer group, and just neutralizing that as much as we can. You know, money is such a charged conversation point in our culture. And it comes out in those ways, you know, the status of where you go to school or what car you drive or whatever it is, there are symbols of status and wealth. And so it's just having that be a part of the dialogue and having gratitude for where you fall on that spectrum and really trying to make the best decisions that you can make within your own family for your own child. And really broadening the conversation about meeting needs. You know, all students are going to have such different needs, and really looking at it through that lens, I find really helpful. You know, not all colleges or well-known colleges are necessarily the best choice for every student, even if you did have the resources to attend them. So it's just broadening the conversation, letting there be other factors in addition to the cost of the college that doesn't necessarily determine the education that someone is going to get or the, you know, mm-hmm. And I just think that's a really important piece of the conversation as a parent, but yeah. Also in my work.
Well, you know, and I've had people tell me that they thought talking with their kids about the cost of college was harder than talking to them about sex.
Yep. So. Yep. And, you know, they really, really appreciate understanding the truth. You know, like, they don't need to know everything but about your financial situation. You know, I think that is such a personal decision and about your own values and your own comfort. But I would say the most important thing is to invite them to ask questions that you can answer honestly, you know, about your financial situation. So it's like, let them lead the conversation. They may have fears or anxieties that are actually, you know, from very outdated, like they put together meaning out of something that they saw, and it's not necessarily the truth anymore or the truth that ever was. And so it's just like giving them space to actually check in and for you to answer and clarify your situation and to really trust them to hold that and to be ready for it. I think it's so valuable for them.
Yeah.
And for us. So, yeah.
So do you have specific suggestions for how you might phrase that? With, you know, when you say to say, you know, let's talk about, dear son, let's have a seat and talk about college costs.
Yeah. Yes. Well, definitely about the college costs. I mean, I think that that is so important to have that conversation, but also including in that conversation, you know, making sure that they air any questions, any anxiety that they have. If they're afraid that you paying for college, you paying for their flights back and forth from college, that is going to mean something catastrophic for your family. So they may have some very untrue assumption about the situation. And so it's just as a part of the conversation around what college is going to cost, giving space and time for them to ask questions about any fears that they have. And sometimes that's the best way to, you know, like, mm-hmm. is there anything you're wondering about or anything you're concerned about or anything you're holding that you're fearful of about our family finances, you know, and then being able to allay those concerns or explain them a little bit more. Just opening up the dialogue, I think, is really healthy and helps them process so much differently. And that can be part or separate from the conversation about what it's going to cost. And, you know, that conversation really needs to start from my perspective, that needs to start with your priorities as a family and with the child, their priorities about, you know, like anywhere from our goal is zero debt, you know, like absolutely no student loan debt, or like you are going to go to the best possible school you get into, no matter what it costs. So anywhere along that spectrum, it's just helpful for all of you, you know, all the people involved to be speaking to what their priority is, because so many decisions will be based from that place. You know,
yeah.
If zero debt is the goal, then you may get really creative and have a very different list of choices than if it's whatever school at any cost. You know, that's a different set of it's a different conversation in both of those. So yeah. Having that conversation from the beginning really helps them understand what they are looking at, what's important to them, and what's important to you, so that they know what is important to you as well.
Yeah.
And why?
Well, and we talk about, you know, there's two really different conversations you can have about college. One is why college, and the other is which college.
Uh-huh.
And yes. And you know, if you approach it from why college, you give yourself a lot of latitude to have different cost structures and whatnot. Mm-hmm. If it's which college, then you are saying we're going to pay what it costs to go here. And I know, like, my husband and I are both super avid alumni of our respective colleges. And we realized, you know, right around when our kids were like 10 or 11, we're like, there's no way we would send them to either of those schools because they're both out-of-state schools that won't give them any financial aid. And so we're like, we got to stop this.
Right, right.
We got to stop with the Go Bears and Go Blue.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to talk about the experiences that we had that we want them to have.
exactly. Mm-hmm. And exactly. And that's the perfect question. And the and again, like getting really clear about what that priority is, and to really broaden, I think broadening the conversation or broadening your thinking about it early on of like whether it's college or something else, it's really the supporting them and launching themselves in their next steps in their life. And that may look very different for different students. And I know my younger daughter, who's a junior in high school, she's not sure if college is in her future in the traditional sense. She knows that she wants something, but it's maybe going to look different than it looked for my husband and I and her sister. So that's new territory for me. College was very important in my family growing up. So, and yet for me personally, college was very much of a struggle. It was not something that I loved or celebrated, you know. It's like I was sort of, you know, I graduated by my chinny chin chin. I was just able to get through. So it's so different for everyone. And my daughter is probably going to graduate school because she is very academic. So it just is so different, depending on who the child is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we certainly experienced that in our family where I have twins and they're completely different as students and they're going to two completely different colleges and each of them is probably as happy as they could possibly be with the choice that they made. And if they switch places, I don't think they could be more unhappy.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the, oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the, and you touched on this in terms of your story with your children, but in that conversation that you might have around, you know, how much college costs, really getting, like really opening up the conversation about the additional costs beyond tuition in that conversation, I find that that conversation with your child is one of the more powerful ones around, like it's actually can be kind of a class in and of itself of what all the additional costs might be. So living costs, but also the flights to and from, if your child is going to school out of state or far away, really factoring in that bigger picture and getting really clear about what the expectations are. Like, are they going to work and are they going to have to cover certain expenses on their own? And what are those expenses and what might they be? And helping them to really see clearly what is required to support themselves in those years. And, you know, I have heard some really tragic stories in my time with clients of, you know, like a parent dropping their child off at college and giving them $50 in their pocket And they thought that was the money for the month, but it was the money for the whole year. And literally no support and no education. And that, you know, just is the beginning of a snowball in such a tragic direction, which often includes, you know, someone's first credit card with a bag of M&Ms or a free t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And then all the issues that come after that. But it's like, oh, I mean, that story just lives in my mind as like just such a tragic story, and not preparing a child for how they are going to be operating on a day-to-day basis with money. So just making sure that that is also a part of the conversation.
Well, and I would really add to aware. That things like, you know, is study abroad something that you're interested in? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the social life on the campus look like? You know, is everyone in the Greek system? Because that's going to add some more dollars. Or what do people do on the weekends?
Yeah, exactly. And even just like sports fees, you know, even going to games and things. Like I remember I went to University of Washington, and I remember thinking I should go to a Huskies. I'm not a football fan at all, but I was like, I should go to a Huskies game. It's just an experience while I'm here, you know? And then I saw the cost of the tickets, and I was even for a student, and I was like, oh my God, there's no way I can afford that. And so it just wasn't even something, like, it just wasn't a priority for me. Obviously, if it had been, I maybe would have found the money, but that, you know, like that's something that people don't quite factor in. You know, in the
and it's experience. So variable from school to school.
It is. Exactly.
At my college, I went to Berkeley, and it was $20 for a season pass for football.
Exactly.
So that was what people did on Saturday.
Exactly. And and so it's just different wherever you go.
I remember one school we visited, there was a dorm that had a there was a Starbucks and a Jamba Juice between the dorm and campus. And I remember standing at the edge of campus and just watching every single student walk by with either a coffee or a Jamba in their hand.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, so you'd need to add $5 a day minimum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's so wild. And like, I think back on it and I'm like, I don't really know. I remember I had Quicken. And I remember I had lots of babysitting, cleaning house jobs while I was in school. And so I just had sort of like the cash in my pocket for gas and anything extra during the week. But it was like very, very, very tight. And I just had to really manage and function on very little. And so I remember going to the student, the student cafeteria or whatever. And I would buy, you know, tea and a day old bagel for 50 cents. You know, it was like $1.50 was kind of my treat on campus. So like, I wish I had known that, or I wish I had been prepared and had more awareness about, I don't know. I just did not have much awareness. So that conversation about what life really costs, especially if your child isn't already, really engaged in their own spending money, which is something else that I would encourage from freshman year, at least all the way through high school. But
well,
if that's
I think
not
that's,
happening, you know,
and I think that's something that's a really tough mental transition for high school students who are used to, like you said, making money from babysitting or mowing lawns or stuff like that, to just like think of what the impact of $40,000 worth of student loans would be on their future self, when that future self might be earning, $60,000 or $70,000 a year. It's like, for the person who's never had more than $20 in their pocket at a time, seems like this is an easy problem to solve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And working with your students your children in being able to understand that debt, if they are going to incur debt, you know, like what that payment will actually represent. I've had sessions with a lot of my daughter's friends about student loans and their budgets and all kind of, you know, everything about it, because everybody comes to me wanting wanting that kind of
support. What you do.
It is. And you know, it's like, if I can help them see the context of the student loan, like what the student loan payment will be, and put that into a framework that they can digest a little bit easier than just that large number, it can really help.
Absolutely. Well, Megan, this has been so helpful. I mean, I think if I were to summarize, which would be doing a huge disservice to all the wisdom that you've shared, but if I were to highlight a couple quick points, it would be, you know, when it comes to savings, build the practice of saving, you know, be systematic, not just with making ongoing contributions, but with increasing those over time as you're able, you know, hold to the intention of saving, you know, when life gets lifey, as the saying, I love that. You know, remember where this fits, you know, where education fits in your overall priorities, and invite questions and dialogue from your kids so that they're, so that there aren't surprises and that they do understand all that's going on here. Are there final words of wisdom you'd add to that?
I don't think so. I think we covered almost everything that was on my mind that I wish I had heard or known as a young parent and also as a young college student. So,
Well, thank you so much. This is the College Financial Lady podcast, and I'm talking with Megan DeBoer. You can follow Megan on Instagram at @tendedwealth. Thank you, Megan, for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Anne.